Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome your Studcast host of television and radio fame, Tony Basilio.
It is 93 years. It is four generations. It's unbelievable that we are in episode 25. Tony Basilio welcoming you to another edition of the Studcast. It is your Studcast, a part of the Arcadian Vanguard family of Studcast. And when you have the man they call the greatest storyteller in the history of not only wrestling Studcast, but the or podcasting, but I believe the man is the Paul Harvey, the Garrison Keillor. He's just a legendary storyteller, and the man could tell any story. But how about he's telling his own story, a story that till now has gone relatively untold, except for a few sketchy history lessons here or there. And Stud, we're coming off a zany night in Georgia, part one, part two, part three, and the story just continues to get told. Welcome in, Stud.
Well, thank you very much. Very glad to be here. It's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to today's ride. He's out there standing there. We got the saddle on him, ready to go. I'm hoping people will get saddled up with me, and we're going to take a ride. We're going to do a little different thing today, maybe, than what we have. You know, I finished the Zany Night in Georgia, first trilogy that we've ever done. Three episodes on one. I really enjoyed doing that for the reason that you just spoke of. There's been so little known about my wrestling family. And that's what the Studcast is all about. It's just to make everyone realize that we were here. My dad and my grandfather, they were pretty much kayfabe. They didn't even want people to know sometimes that they wrestled. They never tooted their own horn. And I'm here to toot their horn. I've done it for Roy. I did it quite a bit in the last 3 weeks with that trilogy of the Zany Night in Georgia. I kind of told what my dad had accomplished in his lifetime. And my dad's lifetime in the sport is not finished. He's still got a lot of things he's going to accomplish here as we continue with this story. And I'm just glad that all these people worldwide, Tony, it's just amazing. The comments are phenomenal. You know, I don't speak much about the rate that the Studcast grows because it's gotten beyond that. Now I think we are credible worldwide as one of the very best podcasts of any kind in the world. And I feel like we don't have to toot our own horn much anymore here. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you're probably not listening to it. But I really appreciate the people and the fans that we have out there. It's just a phenomenal number now that listen on a weekly basis. And we're going to talk later in the program about our Studcast or Super Studcast as well.
Tell you what's amazing to me, Stud, is the number of people who are, and we were talking about this, very off the cuff, very low key. You're not pitching for money. But hey, look, I'm not getting rich doing this. You're not getting rich doing this. And it doesn't hurt that your efforts are rewarded. I think it's pretty remarkable, Stud, that anybody at all has reached out through Patreon and decided that they're going to stand by us, but some folks have. But we could always use some more folks, Stud. And I just think it's a real blessing that we're getting a chance to touch all these people. And I sure hope people will decide to go ahead and do that, which will allow us to keep these Studcasts coming, man.
Yes, I don't think we've mentioned that hardly at all, but if they want to donate because they enjoy the program, because they love it, they want it to continue. A lot of these podcasts fade away because you don't get paid for them. So if they want to, they can go to patreon.com/studcast. You'll see pretty easily how you do it. And you can leave a dollar. You can leave whatever amount you want. If you don't feel like you want to contribute, that's fine, because we're going to do them anyway. We're here and we're going to do them. I love it. I love doing it. But we really appreciate those patrons that do that for us. That's very, very nice of you. And it helps us to continue with what we are doing. You can also do the same thing on my website at tnstud.com. You can go to donate there. You'll see it at the top. You can click on donate if you'd like to. So we're not here for that. We're here for the Studcast. We're here to bring the story, to tell the story. I think it's a wonderful story. I get these comments from some people that say, gosh, your story is unbelievable, and they haven't heard it yet. We're less than a third of the way or 25% through with what I've got in my head that I want to get out there. So today, I want to take us a little different direction because it is my story and my family's story. And I'm going to have a future in basketball, and it's going to be a pretty good future. I'm going to be an all-state player, and I'm going to go to college on a scholarship and do wonderful things that the good Lord blessed me with the ability to have. And I want to today go back to the summer of 65, the same time frame as the Zany Night in Georgia, in which Dad wrestles Glinto with Rocky Marciano refereeing. I want to go back to that same time frame. I want to go back, actually, into the spring of 65 when I am playing basketball in Griffin, Georgia at the Griffin High School. And I have gone in there for my junior year. I remember walking into their gymnasium. They had an entranceway that was 6'6". And at this point, I'm a very thin guy. I'm 6'6", and I only weigh 160 pounds. I'm not a big guy. But I remember going down. I want to play basketball, so I try to find the coach. And I remember going through the doorway, and I ducked, and I stood inside the gym. There was a few people in there. In the back of the building was the coach that I was going to have for that year. And he sees me up there, and I remember him telling the story to me. He says, Ron, I got to tell you what I felt when I looked that day and saw you standing and ducking to come through that 6'6" hole there to get into the gym. He said, all I saw was, my gosh, look at the height of this guy. And this coach, his name was Chris Jones. He played at a small college, NAIA College in Tennessee, just outside of Knoxville. Carson Newman is the name of the college. He was a NAIA All-American. This guy was a bona fide great basketball player. He was drafted and played for the Cincinnati Royals. He played a guard right there beside the great Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And I believe that not only was he a supporter in the cast of that Cincinnati Royals team, he was darn near as good as Oscar Robertson, because I played against him many, many times, sometimes one-on-one in little pickup games. And I remember that at the end of my year, my junior year, I was a junior in high school, he goes to an AAU event. He plays in a tournament with some of the very best college players in America. Some of them are going to go on to be great pros. One of them is going to come from the school that I'm going to end up playing in a few years down the road, from the University of Miami, named Rick Barry, one of the all-time great scorers in the game. And Rick Barry plays in this tournament with my coach, Chris Jones. And Chris tells me, my coach, he says, Ron, I'm going to play in this three-day tournament. He goes, I'm going to lead the tournament in scoring. He started naming the guys, Rick Barry, this guy, that guy, that guy. He says, I'm going to come back here having led this tournament in scoring. And by golly, he comes back 4 days later. I see him. And I said, how'd you do? He said, 35 points a game. That's how. So this guy could play ball. He's a great coach. He's all fired up. I mean, he is so into the game that he starts to get me more into the game myself. It's his first coaching job. It's his second year in coaching. He's a young guy with all this fire and enthusiasm. He's got a great team. The team that I'm on, I'm 6'6". We've got another boy on there that's 6'6". We've got 2 6'4" guys. We've got a tall team, and we have a great year, the best year in the history of that school. We make it to the state tournament. We have a phenomenal year, and this guy is just a phenomenal coach. He is so fiery that on the last game toward the last of the season, we're going to make it into the state tournament for the first time in the history of the school. We play a regional finals with a team in Atlanta. And at the end of the game, I almost lost the game for us. We're really close. Guy throws me a pass, full court. My eyes weren't so good. It's a dark gym, didn't have very good lighting. I drop the pass. A guard swoops it up. He runs down the court. He scores. We go down by one. I think I get the win and go, and we win the game. And I hear him, this is the type of coach he was. It's snowing outside. I hear him screaming my name. He's upset because I almost lost the game, not because I won the game, because I almost lost it. I see him running to get me, and I actually run from him. I go downstairs in a basement and out the back door of the gym, and he follows me out into the snow. I don't know if he's going to smack me around or not. He was really a phenomenal coach, a wonderful guy. So I had all this going for me. I had gone to a school 30 miles basically south of Atlanta, out of the Atlanta City area itself. But it was a fairly decent-sized high school. I'd say it probably had 1,500 students. It's a pretty good-sized town. All the people in that area of Griffin, they went to that one school. If you were high school age, that was your high school. And I was lucky to be in with a group like that that had that ability. It helped me to foster a better plan for myself in the future. And to go back to that old coach I had in Mississippi in the ninth grade that threw me the basketball sitting at his desk and said, boy, if you play with this game and stick, you'll never have to pay for your college. I'm now in a junior. And I'm beginning to see a little bit of what he's saying is true. So for the first time ever, my grandfather comes and sees me play. My dad is not a big fan of basketball. He does not promote me to play basketball. He doesn't want me to play basketball. Lots of times, and I'm very thin, I'm 6'6 and 160 pounds, so I have not much muscle on my body. And he's saying, you know, you're not ever going to be able to wrestle if you keep playing that game because you run up and down the court and you're not going to get bulky. You're not going to get muscle from doing that. You're going to get thinner and smaller. And so he's not promoting me to get highly involved in basketball, but I'm going to go there anyway because I want that college education. I want to go to college. I'd be the first member of my family to ever go to college. And it was kind of a goal I set for myself early on to say, it's something I want to accomplish. So my grandfather comes and visits us in the winter of 65, and he honestly likes basketball. Once I start talking to him about it, he says, are you playing? I said, yeah, I've got a game tonight. And he says, I'm going to go. So he takes me in his old Cadillac. We talked about the Cadillac. Now, he's not going to drive down the middle of the road, thank goodness. He's not barreling along at 120 miles an hour. We live about 5 miles out of town. But he very leisurely and calmly drives me to a basketball game, the first time he's ever seen me play. And we play, I don't remember who it was that night, but I do remember I had 16 points and I think 16 rebounds. Pretty decent game. And there was a radio program, and I was invited to go up after the game and be on the radio. He went up with me, sat down beside me, and I was a little hesitant to talk. I was like, you know, he's done thousands of interviews, and I'm a junior in high school, and I'm got an opportunity here to speak on the radio. And I wanted to say to the game person there, the broadcaster, that, hey, this is my grandfather. In fact, I think I introduced him. This is my grandfather, Roy Welch. He was a big-time wrestler and promoter. I think the guy even said, well, Roy, you'd like to say something. Roy didn't really want to say anything. He was like, no, let the boy talk. So I made him a little interview. It was a nice little thing, but I had the opportunity. It's the only time he ever got to see me play. And it was really nice to have that opportunity to see him and see how much he supported me. And my dad had not support me. Kind of an odd situation.
Let me ask you about that family dynamic. And in particular, you being a young kid at the time, I guess you're probably, 15, 16 years old, the time period we're talking about here. Your father, a prominent wrestler, we've already talked about the big house the preceding summer and that huge event that took place in Ponce de Leon Stadium. How many of your teammates at the time, how many of the people in your high school were even cognizant of the fact that your father was this great wrestler?
Very few. And that was always the case in my entire time in school, starting from grammar school. It was a reason for it. You know, sometimes you got bad comments. I never liked to promote it. I never liked to tell people. I really kind of appreciated the fact that my last name was Welch. I went to school as Ronald Welch, and my dad's last name was Fuller. So it made it easy for me to escape that notoriety. And sometimes when they did find out, and usually they did, in the early years when I was younger, it was difficult because they would come to me and they would say, your daddy's a wrestler, huh? Oh, yeah, my daddy says that's fake and that's all this and all that. You must be good. You must be tough or whatever. And most of the time, it was bigger kids that would say that to you. Somebody was 3 or 4 or 5 years older. And that takes me back to where Dad used to train me. I ran into those situations and I told him I need to know how to wrestle a little bit, Dad. And he showed me several little moves, real simple moves, really dangerous moves. You know, guy gets a headlock on your son, you reach in there, you crotch him between the leg, pick him up and fall straight back, drop him on his head. I mean, that's kind of a killer move right there. You don't do that to many people without hurting them. You know, and then he showed me a couple of, he showed me about 3 basic moves when I was young so that I could start this when I couldn't get out of it by saying, well, you know, I really don't want to wrestle you. I'm too young, whatever. Then I could say, okay, if there's a situation you couldn't avoid, then that's how you handle it. You said, okay, well, let's wrestle. Then I never lost any of those because he was a good trainer. He taught me very well how to do it. So I kind of kept that all my life. When I went places, I really didn't want them to know that he was a wrestler. And lots of times it turned out to be a little bit of a bad situation when they found out. And sometimes it was good. Some people would go, your dad is Buddy Fuller? You know, and I would say, well, yeah. You know, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. That's part of the makeup of my family, I think, Tony. We came from a different ilk, I guess you would say. I don't think Roy really wanted people to know he was a great wrestler, know he was involved in wrestling. It was like they were kayfaying people that they even were wrestlers. And Dad was the same way. Low profile. We come from a low profile family. And that's why I do the Studcast. That's really the prime reason I do this, is because people don't know about us. And not just the normal people, even some of the wrestling people don't know about us. Most people that's been around wrestling and have a great knowledge of the sport, they know who the Fullers are and who the Welches are, who the Fields are. But they don't really know what we accomplished. And that's why I enjoyed doing that trilogy on the Zany Night in Georgia, that one event, because it highlights one of my dad's big accomplishments. And that's what this is all about for me, is just letting people be aware of what the Welches were all about.
What was high school basketball like back in those days? And was it an integrated deal when you started playing? I know where you say you went. Did you guys play some of the inner city schools? How did those things go?
No, that's a great question, too. Actually, they did not integrate schools in the state of Georgia until 1966. Now, as my story here goes on about where I'm going to go and play my senior year, it's going to be in an Atlanta school. And it will be a different situation there, you know, but we're just playing, it's white players playing against white players, and it's black players and playing against black players. White schools and black schools. Terrible time. When you think back on our country, it was a terrible time that we had to have somebody come and change that. And we had to all as a country realize that this is not the way it should be. And I was so pleased that they did. When I played the state tournament in 1965 and 1966 without a black person being involved in it, no black players. And that, to me, it limited the scope and the competition. It was not right. I've always been a proponent. When I end up going to Miami, I'm going to play with the first black player that ever played in Miami. In 1967. He's one of my closest friends to this very day. I dearly love him, and I have some of my greatest friends are Afro-Americans. And so we're playing. That's a great question. No, we played strictly against white schools. White schools played white schools. Black schools played black schools. So you really don't know how good you are when you do that. You've got two different state tournaments even. That's crazy to me. But that was the case back in those days.
And so you were talking about your relationship with your father. Just one more follow-up. As you become more of a basketball star, does he start coming to your games, or is that just something he just stays away from the entire time?
No, things change. You know, oddly enough, they're going to change here in the future. I don't think he came to a single game my junior year. And Roy came to one. The only time he was in town visiting, he came to a game. My dad didn't come. My dad starts to come in my senior year because I become a pretty big name in the state. And so things are going to change with Dad. He's going to take more of a interest in what I'm doing and in the basketball part of it. Rob is at the time, he's training horses. We've got a lot of horses, and Dad's buying horses all the time. Rob's training horses. He's doing horse shows, and I'm focused on basketball. So our interests are in a little different directions. But Dad kind of turned around about that. I start becoming a better player, and I start for the first time, which, you know, people get scholarships. I guess they all go through the same process. I remember getting letters my junior year. The letters would come to the high school. They don't come to you personally. They can't find you. So the letters come to the high school. I remember Chris Jones, my coach, with a big, huge smile on his face saying, "Ron, look at this. This is your first letter. It's from Oregon State." Now, that's way out there on the West Coast. I'm like, Oregon State? But I remember what a thrill that is, what an honor that is to get that recognition. And I start really at that point believing that, you know, I probably have a real good chance of getting that scholarship and getting to be the first one in the family to do it. So summer comes. We finish that season. Summer comes. And I start working out with Joe Scarpa, who lives just a half a mile down the road from me. And Dad sets us up a gym in one of the buildings that's on the farm. And Scarpa and I start working out. I weigh 160 pounds. I'm 6'6". Joe Scarpa has got a great body. He knows how to get big. He just focuses with me on just several small exercises. We bench press. We do squats. We do some curls. We do a little shoulder work, but it's primarily squats and bench because I realize, and I'm starting to learn at that age, what makes you big. The bigger muscles in your body, obviously, are your pecs, your chest. You're going to be big, and it's going to be a weighty, and your legs, your thighs, your butt, all that. So, you know, he turns me on to gaining weight. In 3 months period of time, I go from 160 pounds to 200. I gained 40 pounds in 3 months. That's pretty much unheard of. It's hard to gain that kind of weight. Even cows, I used to get that I would say, geez, Joe, I'm up to 200. And he would go, Ron, you're gaining almost as much as a cow does. Right? So he really was interested in seeing me put on weight and starting to build my body. And he helped me in so many ways. I got so big that I wanted to play football. And we would play football. I had another wrestler friend of my dad's name, Les Wolf, that had been the promoter in Memphis when Dad went there years ago. He's in his 60s. He was a great athlete himself, played football, played a lot of different sports. And he would throw passes to me, and Joe Scarpa would defend against me. So I got to where I could play football. I could really catch a pass, and I could run pretty fast. So when school started back in the fall, I went out for football. I said, gee, I'm going to try to play football. So I didn't talk to the basketball coach all summer. I ran that summer with three sets of leg weights on. I used to run 2 miles a day with three sets of leg weights. And then I would climb this big hill behind our farm with the leg weights on. So I was really, really getting to be a stronger and a different athlete than I was at the end of that in May. In September, I went back to school. I went out for football. I got on the field. I was out there for about an hour. Football coach was watching me catch passes. He was like, wow, B, you're really good. And the basketball coach finds out. He comes and gets me off the field. He actually came on the field right to me, grabbed me by the face mask, looked through the helmet right in the eye to eye and says, are you nuts? What are you doing out here? And I said, hey, I want to play football. And he goes, you're going to get a scholarship. If you can stick with basketball, you know you're going to get a scholarship. You break a leg out here, you miss the basketball season, you may not get your free college education. He had a real good point. He took me off the field, took me to the locker room. Everybody else continued to practice. The football coach is arguing with him on the way out. And he says, the heck with you. He's my boy. I'm taking care of him. So he took me back. He took this stuff off. And that's the last, little foray I had into football. I became a basketball player from then on.
Guy did you a favor, didn't he, Stud?
Yes, he really did. And he did me a lot of favors. That was one of my favorite coaches that I ever had in my life. The guy was a wonderful, wonderful guy. Later on, as things go on here, we're going to move that summer. We're going to move into Atlanta. Now, I'm already beginning to be fairly well known. They start writing articles in the Atlanta paper, the Atlanta Journal, that says Ronald Welch is dead, is looking for a new house, and he's going to be playing in another high school. That's strange, you know, that they do that, that he's going to be moving. So I started getting recruited. I started having schools, guys were getting in touch with my family and saying, we got a house here. I think your dad would like this house. And they're trying to get us to move into Jonesboro or whatever little sub part of Atlanta. Move here, move here. And they're all, you know, it was like I was being recruited before I finished high school, which was really kind of a nice thing to have happen to you. But I stayed because I loved this coach. I stayed there. And when we started the season, that we had bought the house, and it was in the northeast part of Atlanta. The high school I would have been going to was called Briarcliff. And I stayed. The coach, Chris Jones, he says, Ron, stay with me. We want to win a state championship. They're already predicting we're going to win the state championship. I'll find you a place to live. And he did. He found me a home to live in with this older couple. And I stayed there 5 days a week. My mom would drive down and pick me up on Friday nights and bring me back on Sunday so that I could be in school on Monday morning. He entertained me. He made sure I was happy as I could be, which I wasn't happy. I mean, I was living away from my family. And every Saturday when I went home, the Briarcliff coach was at my front door, sitting at my dining room table before that was over, saying, Ron, you need to come here. And finally got me playing with some of those players. And I ended up leaving my coach that I really loved and going to Briarcliff in Atlanta. And that's where, as we talk later on here and further in the program, maybe next week, I want to spend some time now really getting into my dad again and what's happening in his life. I'm going to end up in Atlanta, Georgia, playing high school basketball the senior year in Atlanta. And we'll get to that later, but maybe if we take a break now and give our boy Dave the opportunity, then we'll come back, talk a little bit about Dad, and I know we got some questions today.
Oh, we had some great questions today, as we are episode 25 on your Studcast, And I do want to remind you, if you want to interact with the stud, Ron Fuller, you can do so on Facebook at Ron Fuller Tennessee Stud. And Ron likes to get in there and mix it up with you. And also, that's one of the spots, Ron, where we get a lot of these great questions that we have here on the Studcast.
That's where they come from. Yes, they do. They just about all come from Facebook, actually. But I take things off of Twitter sometimes and Instagram if I get something there. Yeah, a lot of those questions from Facebook.
The website for Ron Fuller is tnstud.com. Again, tnstud.com. And the stud store, Ron's got a lot of great stuff there.
Yes, I don't plug the stud store much, but we've got some other things that are coming in. We're about to do the first five episodes of Studcast in a box issue on CD. That will be coming out pretty soon now. We're also working on some DVDs of matches. I have found someone in England that has some Continental tapes that has sent me stuff. We're in the process of getting that put together so that anybody wants to have a best of Ron Fuller, not only just the matches themselves, I think we're going to have maybe a best of the stud stable in which I just manage. And some of those interviews that people love across the internet, there's been a lot of those going out now being played. Especially I love the old top hat and the long black coat, the tuxedo with the cane. I love those interviews. So we're going to try to put something great together for the fans there too.
It's hard to believe, Stud, that we haven't even really gotten into your, interesting as this whole thing has been so far, we haven't really even touched on your wrestling career. You haven't even gotten into the ring yet.
That's it. I mean, you know, and that's what I love about it. I mean, we're telling the chronological story here. I want it to stay that way. I want us to, I don't want to miss any parts. That's why I'm throwing a little basketball in here. But anyway, this is a wrestling podcast, and it's going to be predominantly wrestling always. I will, for the next little while, be talking a little bit about college days, things like that. But there'll always, our focus is always on wrestling. And after we come back after this break, I want to kind of tell people what's happening now with my dad.
And we're going to do exactly that, as I remind you. If you want to hit Ron up on Twitter, you can do so at Ron Fuller Welch and also on Instagram. In the meantime, David Summers, the Golden Voice, tell him about it as we continue on the other side on your Studcast.
Your attention, Studcast listeners. The Tennessee Stud is giving all of his fans, including me, a Christmas present that will be delivered on Sunday, January 14th, 2018. That present will be a two-hour Super Studcast with more laughs and emotion from the Stud than ever before. One of Rod's all-time favorite wrestlers and close personal friends will be the focus and only topic for this historic first-ever event. The Stud has now become known as one of the best storytellers on earth, and talking about one of his favorite people, Andre the Giant, will allow him to take his skills to another level. We've all experienced what the Stud can do behind the microphone, but this two-hour extravaganza will leave you with an entirely new perspective and appreciation for Andre the Giant, one of the most loved and admired men to ever walk the planet. This Super Studcast can only be accessed in two ways. On Sunday, January 14th, 2018, at 12:01 a.m. Eastern Time, or anytime thereafter, go to the website at tnstud.com. That's tnstud.com. And click on Super Studcast and follow the instructions. Or go to patreon.com/studcast and follow the instructions there. That's either tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast and follow the instructions to get the only Super Studcast available. They will never be available on YouTube or anywhere else on the internet. So make a note of how to get this great event. Saddle up and take the ride of a lifetime with the Tennessee Stud and Andre the Giant. The first ever Super Studcast featuring Andre the Giant is coming soon. This is Studcast episode 25. And now back to ringside with Tony Basilio and the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Tony Basilio back with your Tennessee Stud, the great Ron Fuller. And when last we left, we did so promoting the fact that we were going to give you an opportunity now to ask questions of the Tennessee Stud. And Ron, why don't we jump right into these questions? And then I know you want to get into your dad, or would you rather get into your dad and then do the questions? It's your call, man.
Let's do the questions, all right. And then we'll finish up with a little bit of an update on where he is, where Rob is. I've got a couple little stories I want to tell about me and the shooting with people about that time frame.
Love that. I hope somebody gets hurt. Question number one here on your studcast comes from Daryl Bravo. And I don't know whether that's Daryl's real name or if that's kayfabe, but I give Daryl Bravo a lot of credit. That's not a bad name. Clinton, Mississippi. Or Clinton, yeah. Missouri, rather.
Yeah, that is a good name. Bravo. Anything with Bravo on is pretty darn good. So I didn't pick that question because of that, though. So let's see what he's got to say.
Is there a next generation of Welches coming up? Any sons or daughters of you, Rob, or Jimmy Golden?
Actually, there is. You know, and not just coming up, but there's one right now that's actively wrestling, and it's Jimmy's son. His name is Bobby. Bobby Golden. He's taller than I am. He's 6'10". I'm 6'9". He's 6'10". He weighs about about 265, 270. Good-looking young boy. Trained some by Jimmy. He wrestles in the independents, and he actually trained some with WWE. So he is there. And I have a son named Chad, who is same height, 6'10", as well. And he wrestled in Birmingham. He had one match. I did not push my boys to train. I didn't push my boys to go into wrestling because my career ended in 1988, basically, and I kind of saw what Vince was doing and where I thought wrestling was headed, and it was not what I wanted them to be a part of. So I didn't push them to do it, but Chad did train a little bit with Rob. Chad lived in Tampa, and I was living up in Tennessee and living in the Florida Keys, and he was living here in Tampa with Rob. He was training with Rob, and so was Rob's wife's son, one of her sons. And both of those guys ended up wrestling. And Chad ended up training, and he went to a match with me. He didn't know he was going to wrestle. I went to the ring. I decided I'm going to put him in the ring. And I just said, hey, look, I'm here, but I want my son to wrestle in my place tonight. And he actually got to wrestle in one match. And that's the only match he's ever wrestled in his life. He actually did very well. I was really surprised. He did very well. But Jimmy has a son named Bobby, who wrestles in quite a few events, a lot of them in Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, and is a good wrestler. He's a great guy, great kid. We're blessed, both of us, to have good sons. And it's really sad that the things are different the way they are now. If I had still been in the business, I probably would have handled things differently. But that's the answer to the question. Yes, we do have those two boys, Bobby Golden and Chad Welch.
And Bobby played basketball at Maryville College, and I had a chance during the summers when he was playing basketball 10 or so years ago to call some wrestling matches that he was involved in a local promotion here called NWA Rocky Top. And he was quite a wrestler in the ring. I mean, that you could tell that young man from a young age was taught to wrestle.
Yeah, he's a good wrestler. And my son, Chad, went to Tennessee Wesleyan. That's another college there. It's in Tennessee. So both those guys went to Tennessee colleges. And so that's a great question, really a good question. And I'm sure a lot of fans would like to know that. I'm glad the guy asked it, and that's a good one.
Let's move on. Chris Holyfield, he's in Valparaiso, Indiana, wants to know the following. Wanted to ask you about your work with the Mongolian Stomper. How was that? Also, I remember some of the great matches that you had with him. Just wondering if you could talk about it.
That's a great talent. Mongolian Stomper is a great talent. He actually comes from Calgary, Canada. His real name was Archie Goldie. He was trained by Stu Hart in the Stu Hart's dungeon. He had a basement room in which he had nails nailed into the wall, and he knew where the nails were, and he would take guys down there to shoot with them. And when it got tough going, he would somehow get their bodies up off the mat, and he would drive them backwards onto the nails. And he did it to Archie many times. Archie and I talked about it. The Mongolian Stomper, in my opinion, is one of the great workers of all time, and had a persona about him and a charisma. He was a scary individual. And I had a lot of people say that, and I actually watched him scare a crowd. He made a great first impression in Knoxville, bigger than I have ever seen anywhere before his first event that he ever wrestled in Knoxville. There was a two-ring battle royal. He ended up in the end of the match. Rob was his partner against two other guys. The last two guys in ring one wrestled the last two guys in ring two in a tag. He ended up demolishing the two opponents that he had, and Rob was his partner, and he ended up throwing Rob in the ropes and kicking him in the head and stomping him in the head. They came and presented him the check for $10,000 for the winner, and he ate it. He stuffed it in his mouth. I watched it from back in the back of the building, and he stuffed the check in his mouth, and then he got out onto the floor, and instead of going to the dressing room, he went out into the crowd, like through ringside, and he created more pandemonium in his first appearance than I'd probably ever seen in any wrestling match anywhere in the world. So Archie Goldie, the Mongolian Stomper, and in fabulous shape. Never saw him when he was out of shape. He was a busting, really killing. He would drain you. I hated to wrestle with him sometimes because he would blow me up every time. He would exhaust me, and he would still be going. So I have a lot of respect for him. He's a tremendous, tremendous athlete. He just died this last year. Very sad about that. I really had a lot of respect for him, and of all the people that ever wrestled and worked for me as a promoter, he was probably one of the very best that I ever dealt with. I loved Archie. Good question.
You know, even in his latter years here locally, as I come and we do this program in Knoxville, Tennessee, and Archie made his living here and then wrestled on the independent circuit for many, many years up till his untimely demise. But even into his older age, people commented on the physical shape that Archie was in. I mean, Archie always took great pride on being in tremendous physical condition. Well into his late 60s, remained a guy that you did not want to mess with, lest you wanted to get hurt.
Yes, sir. You know what was really funny? He looked so good, he didn't have to worry about people messing with him. I mean, he was such a physical specimen that people didn't want to mess with Archie. And he had that bald head. He had that look about him. And people wanted to run from him, not run toward him. They wanted to get away from him. So I don't think he had any trouble ever any place he went with people messing with him. He was a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. Real quickly, I saw him, me and my two sons watched him at one of the big gyms in Knoxville, an hour and a half on a stair step machine running that had to be full steam. And he never stopped. I never saw anyone that could do that. He sweated. My boys went up and looked when he got off the machine. They said, "Dad, it was a puddle of water and sweat for 3 feet all the way around that machine." I mean, he was a phenomenal, phenomenal shape. Great, great guy as well.
Archie over there doing the Harvard step test. I'd be blown up after about 90 seconds. As Stud, question one or question two, we going with Daryl Bravo out of Clinton, Missouri, or his counterpart in the middle part of our country, Valparaiso, Indiana's own Chris Holyfield? Question one or two, Stud?
I think we're going to go with the gentleman that asked about the family. I got to, you know, I appreciate the fact people are interested in knowing about that fourth generation. That is the fourth generation. Thank goodness for those two boys. If it wasn't for that, we'd just be a three-generation family. But we're 93 years and four generations, and that's the fourth generation, and I appreciate that question. Probably wouldn't have mentioned them had it not been for that.
Yeah, when we get into 2018, we're going to have to change this thing to, and we're right on the cusp of it, we're going to have to change this thing to 94 years. So there you go. But Stud, who's counting at home? You wanted to say, I know, a few words about your father as well, now that we've gotten through those questions.
Yeah, I just want to real quickly end this particular Studcast with a little bit of an update on what Dad started doing. Now, we had this big monumental event we talked about in the summer of 65, in which we talked about the money, basically, that was paid for the wrestling, the payoff for that match. And I didn't go into what the promoters made. One reason I became a promoter is pretty quickly I realized when I started wrestling that the real money is made by the promoters. So, you know, on that $400,000 gross house in summer of 65, there was a lot of bread made by the promoters. And Dad and Ray Gunkel owned that company. And so Dad starts buying land. You know, my granddad, in his time, he ran a wrestling company and he built a huge dairy at the same time. So my dad's running a big wrestling company and he decides that he wants to buy land. He wants to clear these farms that he buys and make beautiful farms out of them, build lakes on them. He has the bulldozer. He has all the tools. It's like he's not got enough by just running a wrestling company. He wants to start buying these properties and building these beautiful farms. He buys farms, three in particular in the Atlanta area. One is in a town called Locust Grove, which is on Interstate 75, just probably about 40 miles south of Atlanta. He buys one in Barnesville, Georgia. He buys another farm in Zebulon, Georgia. So he's buying farms on the outskirts of Atlanta, buying property and cleaning them up. And he's working me and Rob on the farms when he can. But Rob and I are starting to, he's starting now to say, I'm teaching you how to wrestle. Now I'm going to teach you how to promote. He starts in a great way. He runs these small towns. Every territory had them. You had major cities that ran on every regular night. And then you had what they were called spot shows, in which were small towns in which you provided them with a card. People that never got to see you normally, they got the chance to see you. So he runs these spot shows, and he had me and Rob do everything. We had to set up the ring. We set up the chairs. We would either sell tickets or work in the concession stands. We would usher and seat people at the seats. We would clean up the building after the event was over. It was just another job he could have for us to do, which he was always good at, finding that work for us and keeping us out of trouble, I guess, keeping our heads straight. And so we learned everything about operating a wrestling event. It was great to set up rings because you knew what rings were all about. You got to see how they were put together and how they were built, what makes a good ring, what makes a bad ring. You learn all of those things. It was a great opportunity for us to do our thing, to be involved in matches. We would do these things weekends, school nights. Obviously, we're in school and we're doing our thing in school. But on weekends, we went to these towns and did everything. Drove the vehicles, hauled the ring. I mean, he put a lot of responsibility on us. He gave us those responsibilities, trying to make us grow up and to realize, make a decision maybe. I think he was thinking, I want to know if they really want it. Do they want to be wrestlers, or is this something they're going to do and go, I don't want any part of that? It's probably his way of checking us out to see, are we going to be wrestlers someday, or are we not going to be wrestlers someday? So my dad's doing this. He's got a lot of things going. He's running a wrestling business. He's buying property. He buys these farms. He clears them off. He writes off the money that he spends to clean the land and to clear the land and to hire the people to do the work that's necessary to be done. Then he sells the property and he takes what back in those days was capital gain, which means he pays less tax on it. If he sells it during a certain time frame, he can take this capital gain tax. So he starts to have problems with the IRS because he's buying so much and selling so quickly, and he's got this big income coming from his wrestling that I remember they came one day. I have one story I really like. IRS guy comes to my dad's house. I'm in senior year. He comes and knocks on the door, and I go answer the door. He's dressed up in a suit. It's summertime. It's very hot. Dad is out in front of the property driving a tractor with a bush hog on the back. He's clearing land. They're just cutting grass and little small trees and that type of stuff. And the guy comes, knocks on the door. He shows me his badge. He says, I'm with the IRS. Here's my card. And I'm looking for Buddy Fuller. And I said, that's him. I point out to Dad on the tractor out there. I said, that's him. He's out there. And he says, go out there and tell him that I'm with the IRS and I want to talk to him right now. So I know that Dad's getting a lot of this. You know, they've been to see him and he goes and visits them and whatever. I don't know the intricate parts or the inside part scoop of what's really going on. So I go out And I go to Dad, and I flag him down. He stops the tractor. He cuts the gas back so we can talk, and he says, yeah, what's going on? And I said, that guy there, he wants to see you. He says, who's he with? I say, he's an IRS guy. He says, tell him I'll be right there. He cranks up the tractor, and he keeps bush hogging. So I go, and the guy's standing out beside his car. And he says, yeah, did you tell him? I said, yeah. He said he'd be right here. And I go in the house. And about 15 minutes later, I look, and the IRS guy is still standing by his car. And Dad's out there in the same field. He's still bush hogging. So the guy comes back, the IRS guy. He knocks on the door. Now he's sweating. He's got sweat running down. He's unloosened his tie, you know, and he says, you need to go out there and tell that guy to come see me right now. So I go back out. And Dad stops the tractor. He cuts the gas back. He says, yeah. I said, he says that you need to come and see him right now. He said, tell him I'll be right there. And I go back. I go over to him and I say, he says he'll be right there. So he says, all right, he better be. So I go back in the house. I probably wait 15 minutes, knock on the door. Here he is again. Now he's got his ties off. He's got his shirt unbuttoned. He's sweating. You can see his shirt's getting wet. And he says, go out there and tell him that I said he's got to come right now, or I'm going to come out there and tell him myself. So I said, okay. So I go back, same routine, stop the deal. Yeah. Dad says, how's he doing? I said, well, you know how he's doing. I said, he's getting pretty hot. You know, and he goes, tell him I'll be right there. So I go, wait a minute, Dad. I said, wait a minute, Dad. Are you serious? Are you going to be? He says, and he chuckles at me. He goes, he goes, no, just tell him I'll be right there. So I go back. Now I get it finally. Oh, I see the deal. So I go back. I say, he says he'll be right there. Oh, the guy just gets in his car, man. He just squeals out the driveway. I'm like, oh, gosh. I'm thinking, boy, when you go back to see them again, Dad, it's going to be a bad deal. You know, we probably all had that little IRS call, or it's a difficult deal when you're dealing with those people. And I don't think Dad was cheating him. I think they probably saw tax returns and saying, geez, man, this guy, look at all these businesses he was in. Dad had a private accountant that handled all his accounting, and he paid the guy, I don't know what he paid him every year, but that guy took care of all of his stuff. So it's really a fun thing to talk about my dad. That's the kind of person he was. He had a very strange sense of humor. He didn't care. He had no respect for those guys. He didn't like dealing with them. And he must have had a great time in that 45-minute little segment there of watching that guy out there sweating his rear end off.
Your dad had no fear. I mean, I give your dad credit. That's one common theme here.
Yeah, he had no fear of any man. He had no fear of the IRS. He had no fear of anybody or anything. And he would do the same thing. If you saw a rattlesnake and it's crawling right toward him, he would grab himself a stick, and he would push that down on that snake's head, and he'd grab that snake, and he'd want to play with that rattlesnake, and he wouldn't kill him. He liked to just let him go. He'd play with him and say, hey, come here, boy. Here, you hold him. It'd make you hold him. I'd have to hold him. Rob would have to hold him. You hold him. You know, make sure you see you got a deadly animal. You got a deadly thing in your hand there. It ain't going to hurt you. It ain't going to kill you. It's the way he did things. He was not afraid of anything.
Stud, we're about out of time. Now, are you going to tell me that we're really going to do this Super Stud Cast? We've been talking about this now for about a month.
It's definitely going to happen. It's not about to happen. I'm going to do what I've been asked to do. People are asking me more content. Some people say even the questions detracting from our content, you know, but I think our questions are good. I like to do those questions because it really takes us in different directions, and I like to do that as while I'm telling the story. But yes, we're definitely doing a Studcast Sunday, January 14th. Mark it on your calendars at home. You'll be able to go to patreon.com/studcast, and you'll be able to see how you're going to take care of getting that stud cast. It's a 2-hour stud cast. It's not the regular one. We're going to do these just like we always do them every Wednesday. They're going to be like clockwork. You just go there, click on your stud cast, and it'll be there for you. These are super stud cast, and there will be a little nominal $2.99. That's all we're asking. It's like a donation, and my reward is to give you this 2 hours of the best I got. I guarantee you, I don't believe anybody will take one of these that at the end of it says, I didn't get it. I didn't get my money's worth, because I'm going to lay it all out there, and I'm really pleased. The first one, Andre the Giant, he's family. To me, Andre was family, and I'd love to hug his big old body right now, and I'm going to hug him in my own way, and it's going to be in this stud cast, this super stud cast. I'm going to be able to put my arms around Andre, and I'm going to tell people stories that they think I'm a good storyteller. I want to see the comments after the first super stud cast and just see how much you like it. I also want to wish everybody Happy New Year for darn sure. You know, we're headed into 2018, and we're about to start pretty quickly now into my generation. In fact, in the next episode, I plan on giving everybody a roundup of where we're at. How far along is Jimmy? How far along is Lester's sons, Roy Lee Welch and Jackie Welch? How far along are the Fields brothers' sons, Rob and I, our training, what we're doing to prepare, because we're all getting ready to become wrestlers. And this story, these stud casts are going to jump up another level when I'm able to finally start talking about myself some and Rob and Jimmy and this third generation that we're about to unveil here in the coming stud cast.
Well, Stud, I've got a New Year's resolution. I don't know about you. And generally, I don't make these, but I've listened to the critics on Twitter, and I've decided that I'm going to speak less on here in 2018. More of the stud and less of me here on the stud cast.
Geez, Tony, I think I've been doing a whole lot of it anyway. I love it. Your comments to me are great. You know, and I love especially when you go Googling me, man, when you start that Google trip on me. You know, it's like, I think we obviously are building audience consistently. We're doing something right. And I don't see the needing to change too much here. I just want us to keep it going. I want to rock them with our stud cast every week. And these super stud casts, this first one, Sunday, January 14th, that's going to be something special. If you're a stud fan and you're a stud cast fan, you can't miss these. These will be the best of the best. Really looking forward to it. To everybody, into 2017 here. It's been a great year for me. It's been a wonderful year because I've discovered that I'm pretty good at this stud cast thing, that I'm pretty good at being a podcaster and being able to talk to people. And I'm blessed with all these stories, and I got so many of them left and so much more in me. I can't wait to lay it out there for them in 2018. It's going to be a record year for us, Tony. We're going to set records just that may never be broken. Number of people that are listening to us. I think at the end of 2018, people are going to go, gee, Manny, I thought their story was good in 17. But 2018 is going to be an even bigger year.
And on that note, if you want to interact with the Tennessee Stud, you can hit him up on Facebook at Ron Fuller, Tennessee Stud, all spelled out. Website, tnstud.com. There you'll find the stud store and perhaps more information about our special Super Stud Cast, number one on the life and times and personal interactions and stories with Andre the Giant. Also, on Twitter and Instagram, Ron Fuller Welch. Stud, anything else you want to add on the way out? It's been great today, man.
Happy New Year to everybody out there, and let's have a great 2018. Good luck to everybody. Health, really important. Everybody's health to be well. It's just great to be alive. I just love living. You know, I'm going to take the old horse back now, and I'm going to bathe him off a little bit, wash him down, and and put a blanket on him. It's cold weather, and have him ready come next week, next Wednesday. Let's do another stud cast.
How about if we do that? And for the Tennessee Stud, once again, this is Tony Basilio wishing you a wonderful, wonderful week. I hope you have yourself a great one. Until we meet again in 2018, for the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller, Tony Basilio saying, have a great day, have a great week. Here's to a wonderful 2018. Happy New Year, everybody. Take us home, David.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains. This Studcast is distributed by Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. For inquiries about vocal work, send an email to davidsummersproductions@gmail.com.